Everything gonna be all right this morning.
We are off once again, ladies and gentlemen. Another one for the archives. It's me speaking to you with Jeffrey Wilson, coming to you live and direct right here from the gateway to the West, St. Louis. Once again on this gloomy year of our Lord, 2024, April 26th. And taking a little time out of his day, I'm so fortunate to have this job is just so cool, man. The people I've been able to come across and have conversations with has been absolutely amazing. I came across this gentleman from a good friend of mine. Shout out to my man, Michael White. He hit me up to a fighter that he represents, who I also recently had on, Austin Hall, who just recently just another impressive victory. Remember the name. Let's just say that. Flyweights, look out. Austin Hall is coming for all of your heads. But yeah, recently made his acquaintance through Michael White, and he's so gracious to come through today, man. His name is John Simmons. He's very prolific in the game. Let me dust off his resume here. He was very cool to hit me up with his bio. Again, it's so crazy the people you get to meet. Check this out, man. He is over 30 years of mixed martial arts training, Open Odyssey Martial Arts Academy in 2000 when he was 16 years old in the 10th grade. Holds a third-degree black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, holds a combatist black belt, and was the first ever civilian to earn it. Former amateur and pro MMA fighter and current pro trainer. Has worked head of security for platinum-selling artists such as Five Finger, Death Punch, Korn, Slipknot, and more. Certified in defensive tactics for law enforcement and high-risk operators. Certified firearm instructor and teaches civilians concealed carry and handgun courses. Man, there's a lot of meat on that bone, brother, and we're going to try to pull as much as off as we possibly can. John Simon, how are you doing today, bro?
Oh, I'm good, man. I appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate you giving my guy Austin Hall a shout-out, man. He is a savage MMA fighter on his way up the flyweight chain, man, and you said it right. I mean, he just he dismantled his last opponent, and great news. I'll go ahead and break the news while I'm here on the podcast now. He is officially fighting on the Anthony Pettis Fighting Championship card in July here in Virginia. So he'll be fighting again very soon this year.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those. I make the joke anymore that these kids are coming out of the womb with blue belts. I mean, just because the MMA game is so ubiquitous anymore and it's changed so much, and I've been around enough to see the evolution from, you know, Pride, UFC 1, all that stuff. These kids are just, I mean, Austin clearly lives and breathes it. And, you know, we'll get into that, how that relationship got on. But, man, I love a good origin story, brother. Man, you have such an incredibly decorated and established career in the world of what you're into. I mean, obviously from the mixed martial arts, the, you know, hand-to-hand combat, firearms training, et cetera. You even had a have a military career, and we'll get into. But when did that bug bite you as far as, you know, combat sports and getting into martial arts?
Well, funny enough, my mother actually got me involved in it when I was 7 years old. You know, I'm about 140 pounds. When I was in school, I was a really small kid, and I was getting beat up. And my mom decided that she wanted to put me into martial arts, and UFC 1 had just happened, and she rented the VHS cassette tape back in the day.
Oh, wow.
Saw Gracie Jiu-Jitsu Master Hoist Gracie. You know, taking people out, and she decided that she wanted to put me in. And at the time, one of the first Gracie Jiu-Jitsu schools on the East Coast was about a half hour away from my house. I started doing Gracie Jiu-Jitsu and never looked back, man. It's like it gave me my first sense of power. You know, like I always tell this story. I'll tell it real quick.
No, go
my
for
cousins,
it.
I grew up with my cousins, and they were always really rough, bigger than me, football players. And they would always beat me up because I was the smallest cousin. And then one day we were, you know, wrestling around in the backyard, and I ended up taking my cousin's back and I put him in a choke and he was defenseless. And that was the first time in my life that I actually felt like I actually had power to stop somebody that was trying to hurt me. And after that, I just decided this is what I'm doing for the rest of my life. And here I am at 39 years old and it's my full-time job, and has been since I was 16.
Well, and that's not a unique story. I think it was even Bruce Lee's story. Like, you know, getting picked on, being bullied.
Yeah.
And jumping into a gym or, you know, a dojo or whatever, and starting to learn. And, you know, I try to explain this to people all the time. Not that I'm an expert or whatever, but I'm like, stop. Don't think, like, just because you're larger in mass that you're, like, the toughest guy in the room or whatever. Because there's these little – you walk up to an Austin Hall or a John Simons of the world, you will get slept on the spot. You just don't know what people have in their arsenal anymore, man.
I compare it to stuff like look at NASCAR racing, right? I mean, everybody can drive a car. Everybody has a driver's license, but you can't race a car like a Richard Petty or a Dale Earnhardt. There's levels to the game. And oftentimes, I mean, if you look at some of the best martial artists in history, they're all light guys, from Bruce Lee to Grandmaster Elio Gracie. And a lot of times the smaller people become experts because they don't have the athleticism or the size and strength to make the game shine through. So, you know, that's always what I've looked at, as far as the smaller guys tend to be more technical. That's not always true. You've got your Gordon Ryans of the world. But yeah, the small people tend to be super technical and have the whole thing mapped out.
Well, and as it translates to the streets, I mean, most people are like, oh my God, he's huge in a street fight. I'm saying, you know, that guy's huge. This little guy could never. And like, I tell people, I mean, granted, physics are physics, but a smaller, medium sized, well trained cat, 9 out of 10 times, in my opinion, is probably going to murk your big muscle bound bodybuilder type cat. So technique oftentimes wins over the perception of strength.
Well, you know, that's funny because and this will lead me into, and I know you want to talk a little bit about the security stuff I do with some bands.
For sure.
Stuff like that. The band Five Finger Death Punch, the lead guitarist Zoltan Bathory, he's actually a BJJ black belt now, and is actually putting together some pro competitions at high levels, which is really cool now to see that evolve and change. But they're
if you ever need an announcer, security, brother, if you ever need an announcer,
I'll see if I can get you in contact. But their original head of security, his name was Case Colcord, and he's a real, real super cool guy. I'm a good friend of his now. But at the time, he was the head of security. And Zoltan came out to my gym here in Virginia and wanted to train jiu-jitsu. And we were training, and his head of security was kind of clowning on me a little bit, like, who's this little guy we came all the way out here to train with? And Zoltan looked at him and said, hey, you know, if you're going to sit there and laugh, you got to get in here and roll with him.
Yeah.
And I ended up putting a clinic on him. They took it back to the band, and they're like, there's no way this little guy just wrecked our head of security. And just a few short days later, I find myself in the position as the head of security for Five Finger Death Punch.
Was he, you might have mentioned, I apologize, was he trained at all? Had he had any training?
From what I understand, he was from Vegas, so he had a bunch of MMA friends, and he was just a really big, strong guy. So I'm sure he had a little bit of training.
Okay.
But nothing in comparison to, you know, somebody who dedicated their life to the arts.
Right. And again, that's kind of the secret sauce, man. Like, stop sleeping on. I mean, you just never know who you're rolling up on. But I don't want to get ahead of myself. You know, so you started out as a very, very young man in the game. And so when did that morph, obviously 18, getting into the military? I mean, you have a very, very established military background, and you implemented a lot of your training in your military career. Am I correct?
Yeah. So the Army reinvented their hand-to-hand combat program, and it was rebranded as the Modern Army Combatants Program. And what they did was they wanted to bring in civilians that were experts in their fields and help to train the trainers, essentially train military personnel to be able to spread hand-to-hand combat effectively throughout the military. And I was brought in the infancy stages. And in the beginning, it was broken down levels 1 through 4. And I was fortunate enough to, I believe it was 2008, don't hold me to the year, but I was fortunate enough to be the first civilian to graduate as a level 4 combatives instructor.
Wow.
And then just a couple years ago, they implemented a belting program, which was a formal combatives belt program. And I was the first civilian to earn my combatives black belt, which is a proving program, not a technical program, meaning that nobody cares, like, how many years you've been training. There's a prerequisites, like you have to have won X amount of jiu-jitsu fights, pro MMA fights, competition pistol, rifle, shotgun. There's physical fitness requirements, and you have to prove that you can do all these things in order to get your belt, instead of just performing a list of, you know, random techniques, like I can do a punch, a kick, and an arm bar.
Well,
I was able to earn that, and I was very proud of that combative black belt.
Have you noticed? I mean, I see a lot of kind of joking videos online, and I don't mean to kind of hijack the term because I know it is serious. Do you see in the MMA kind of jiu-jitsu instructor world this kind of stolen valor? Like, hey, I'm XYZ, but you're really just kind of posing and taking advantage of, you know, the popularity of a sport. Do you see that? Have you noticed that over the last several years?
Well, yes and no. And here's what I'll say about it. Like, in the beginning, with the OG guys in the community, this was not an industry.
Right.
This was something that you chose as a path of life because, you know, you needed it to survive, or, you know, you had a genuine passion in the way of life. Now, you know, mixed martial arts, like when I first started mixed martial arts, it wasn't even a term.
Right.
MMA wasn't even a thing. It was Vale Tudo or no holds barred, or, you know, now we're calling it MMA. And then you got all these tactical combatives or Krav Maga this and military Israeli that.
Can I ask you, in your opinion, yeah, did Bruce coin the term with Jeet Kune Do? Because essentially, isn't that what MMA is, utilizing what's useful, like utilizing multiple arts? Didn't it start with...
I believe so.
Okay,
I'm
just curious.
So. I have a fairly extensive background in Jeet Kune Do and Wing Chun Kung Fu and all that stuff, too. I've done a whole bunch of different martial arts. And in my personal opinion, and some people might disagree, I think that Jeet Kune Do was probably the first ever American mixed martial arts concept. Now, I don't think he had it systemized. I don't think he had it all figured out. But at the time that Jeet Kune Do existed, the UFC 1 hadn't even happened yet. Gracie Jiu-Jitsu hadn't really hit the states heavy. None of that. So he was well ahead of his time, and he had the right idea at the time. And, you know, we just took what he put on the table and expanded upon it. I mean, mixed martial arts is not only the fastest growing sport in the world, it's also the fastest evolving sport in the world.
For sure. No, without it, I mean, it's been cool to watch the explosion, but I think it's, you know, going back to what we were just talking about, Jeet Kune Do, I think it's very, you know, the whole utilizing of what is useful and utilitarian and discarding which isn't. I think it's a very, I don't know, I think that's kind of what we see with mixed martial arts. And it's kind of interesting because so many martial arts were so rooted in their techniques for so long. For almost UFC 1, you kind of saw the absurdity of it. You know, one guy had like one boxing glove on his hand. You had the big sumo guy. Like, everyone had their one discipline. But as we saw, it's multiple really disciplines now, which really makes you a mixed martial artist. And I think wrestling and jiu-jitsu is really leading the way as far as, in my opinion, is the application.
Well, I think that Bruce Lee had it right. I mean, now, you know, MMA is very trendy as well. Like, you'll see a guy, I'm making something up, don't hold me to this, but like a guy like Alex Pereira will come in and hit somebody with a head kick or something, and then all of a sudden everybody's like, oh man, striking's the way. Or a wrestler will come in and take somebody down and dominate them, and everybody's like, oh, wrestling's the way. That's not true. What is true is that there's five ranges to combat. There's kicking, punching, trapping, grabbing, and ground fighting. And there are hundreds of martial arts that are all based in all of these different five ranges. And based on those five ranges, there have been martial arts that have come to the forefront. For kicking, you know, it's arts like Muay Thai kickboxing tends to be the most prominent, right? Boxing for the hands. You know, when it comes to trapping, that's where, you know, an art like Wing Chun would come in. But trapping to grabbing is such a short and temporary range that you don't see it utilized very often, because most people go from hands right to clinching. Okay, so once you clinch, that's when you start to see arts like the clinch work from Muay Thai, wrestling, judo. You start to see that become a necessity. And then obviously once you hit the ground, you've got your Brazilian jiu-jitsu, your wrestling, even some judo that still applies on the mat. So what you're finding is you better be good at all five ranges of combat. And then the level above that is, can you blend those together seamlessly? You know, it doesn't matter. Like the day of being a single martial arts expert, like a Royce Gracie, or even what you see with they're trying to push like Bo Nickel. And Bo Nickel's incredible. I'm a fan and I hope he does well, but he's been doing boxing since he was a kid. He currently holds a purple belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. He's not just a wrestling guy. He's an incredibly talented wrestler that is trying to pick up all the pieces that he should have been doing his whole life.
And putting them
If he
together.
planned on, like he's a dinosaur in comparison to a kid like Austin Hall, who's been doing mixed martial arts in its entirety, all of them equally and blurring them together since he was 5 years old.
And I
this
guess
is just a difference.
There's probably no definitive answer for this, but what is the learning curve for something like that? Somebody who's trained in all arts, but then have to, that putting it together, it has to be different for everybody, I guess. But I mean, do you have to get your ass whooped by a wrestler to realize, oh, I need to focus more on my, I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure what I'm asking, but it's
well,
like,
I understand what you're saying. And I think that, you know, they say styles make matchups,
sure.
Right? So I really think it depends on who you're going against. Right? Like you can be a good wrestler, like a really good wrestler, and feel like your game is solid until you have to wrestle Islam Makhachev.
Right.
Or Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Yeah.
And then you go, oh my God, my wrestling's terrible. And it's like, no, that's not true.
Yeah.
But you know, when you put it head to head with that guy's wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, or if you're like, man, my jiu-jitsu's solid. And then you go in there and you face somebody that's got jiu-jitsu like Charles Oliveira. And it's like, oh man, like my jiu-jitsu is not so good. So I think we are starting to see individual fighters start to come up that are equally good at everything. And I think what's really going to start to happen in the future is we're going to have to see fighters becoming more athletes. Because I always tell all my guys, athletes first, martial artists second. Because you don't want to have your opponent have any physical attributes over top of you. So if you want this to be a professional sport like football, basketball, baseball, what do all those sports have in common? They're all athletes.
Next level athlete, yeah, for sure.
Right, so you have to be a next level athlete, and then it's a prerequisite that you're a good mixed martial artist. So
it's so crazy to see how the game's changed in such a short period of time. I think it's absolutely cool, yeah.
And then I also think streamlining training is important, like – as an example, it shouldn't take a decade for somebody to get a black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu anymore. We have – it's not that it doesn't take that long to become an elite-level competitor or fighter, but, you know, so many years went by with me training in jiu-jitsu where you're almost your own instructor. Like, you're taking classes, but nobody's really telling you the exact path to take. They're, oh, just keep doing it, you'll get better. Or, you know, oh, just keep rolling and you'll get better. But, you know, everybody's only got so much time on this earth and so much time to spend on the mats.
Yeah.
So how do I get better faster? And then, you know, you look at an art like jiu-jitsu or wrestling or kickboxing, they're all limited by whatever range and whatever they want to teach you for fighting. But none of them, like jiu-jitsu doesn't teach you how to plug your punches in. Boxing doesn't teach you how to plug your takedowns in. Wrestling doesn't teach you how to apply submission holds. So it's like that's where mixed martial arts really takes over. And I believe that's the next evolution is, you know, blurring the lines or erasing the lines altogether and then having someone get good at this in a really short amount of time. And I think that that comes down to the quality of instructors that we have in the current era. Like you look at a guy like, you know, John Danaher, you know, like these are guys that have taken a random sea of unrelated techniques and systemized them like a science.
Yes.
So that's what I think the next level of evolution is getting it all done faster.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, because the sport's not going anywhere. Like you said, it's
no,
like, you know,
absolutely not.
The fastest growing sport. And I don't know, man. There was a time. So I mean, obviously, you know, I've worked with Pat Miletich, one of my besties. The Miletich
He's
fighting
awesome.
System.
I love Pat.
Yeah, that's my homie. But there was a window there where, like, for me, just having seen all the growth of Pride and all, like Matt Hughes, at one point in time was great. His hands weren't the best, but he was an incredible wrestler. He could mm-hmm. submit you, and his hands were not terrible. For me, at one point in time, I'm like, dude, this is kind of the embodiment of mixed martial arts. He was putting it all together, and that's kind of
that's
what
right.
the MFS was all about. Because you had a lot of beasts out there and striking. You know, Anderson was like, well, whatever. He's kind of an anomaly, but like you said, you have a lot of people who are good at one thing. But like MFS and some of those guys were really starting to put it all together, and there was that window where Matt was like, in my eyes, like the best at that point in time. Like when he fought Hoist Gracie, like, is Hoist gonna, could he win? I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Hoist versus Matt right now? No disrespect against
right.
Hoist, but like, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. I trained with Hoist for many, many, many years. I got my purple belt in Gracie Jiu Jitsu from Hoist. And when that fight was even announced, I was like, man, come on. We're going to take a classic car right now and run it against a muscle car.
Right.
You know, like, yeah, you know, it's no different than any other sport, right? If you took Emmett Smith and put him back in the NFL right now, he's kind of going to look like a joke.
Right.
Even if you took him in his prime, the game has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important that people understand that. That doesn't mean that we don't like seeing classic matchups. Like, I'm all down. If they want to put Hoyce Gracie versus Ken Shamrock part 12, I'll watch it. Yeah. I think there's room for guys that want to compete at an older age. I just, you know, I don't think it's fair to say, oh man, like this guy versus that guy. They're from completely different eras.
Well, and it's always cool. And I have a deep appreciation. I don't, I hate to say that I've done jujitsu when I talk to people like you. I mean, I've done it before, but I'm kind of one of those fly by nights, in and out. Now, but anyway, I love the tournaments, man. Like my boy Eddie Bravo, like all the kind of like, it's not striking involved, man. Cause I think a lot of people, the fans are becoming way more educated on the sport, especially jujitsu. So I think seeing those kind of tournaments, even for, like you said, elder statesmen and shit, it's really cool to see.
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, there's so much evolution going on right now that the hardest thing for students to do when they come into a gym is to absorb it all. You know, like I've been running a school now for, I mean, since 2000, that's when I opened the gym. So 24 years I've been running a gym. And every time I teach a class, I go, you know, which part of this is the most important part to get across to these people? And how can I streamline it and make it fast for them to learn this? Because these people want to get their black belts at some point. And if they want to get their black belts, I don't want them to feel like, say there's 900 moves in jiu-jitsu. Do you really need all 900 moves to get a black belt? No. Well, if that's true, then what do you need? And what is the actual prerequisites to get your black belt? And that varies from gym to gym, instructor to instructor. So, well,
and also, I mean, I think there's a huge, let me ask you this. I'll ask this first. What do you feel, just having done it for so long, the benefits of martial arts in your life? I've interviewed so many people, from your Austin Halls of the world to freaking Ed Suarez to Pat Militant. I mean, Boss Rutan. These are the most chillest, and humble pie is always on the plate at all times with these guys. Nobody's walking around like, hey, I'll beat your ass. And I always found that so freaking cool, because they could literally kill you at any moment, but they just don't. And there's something about that kind of humility that this kind of sport and this kind of martial art brings to people. Is that something that's resonated with you, having done it for so long?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest benefits of martial arts in general is the lifestyle that it forces you to live. So it keeps you grounded. Like, no matter how awesome you might become, like you might become an awesome fighter, an awesome teacher, an awesome athlete, whatever it is, it keeps your feet grounded. I'll circle it back around to Five Finger Death Punch and Zoltan Bathory. I asked him one time, I'm like, man, you're like, you're a rock star, you got lots of money, fancy cars, big house, you know, why do you want to do jiu-jitsu? And I really appreciated what he said. And he said, John, I want to get my black belt because I want something that money can't buy.
Truth.
I want to possess something that's, you know, from the real world, outside of being a rock star celebrity. You know, he's like, I want to have a jiu-jitsu black belt because it keeps me grounded. And that really made sense to me. And I'm like, you know, I guess that kind of circles back around to what you're saying about the humble pie always being on the table.
Yeah.
Is yes, it does keep you humble. But it also keeps you disciplined.
True.
Right? Because as a martial art, like, and for me, I've been doing it since I was 7. So I've never really known what it's like to be out of shape.
Right.
Right. So I have to keep myself accountable to that, right? Like, I've gained a couple extra pounds here and there and went, whoa, I gotta, you know, watch what I eat or exercise a little more. If I'm getting too tight, I gotta stretch. So it keeps you accountable as a man.
Yeah.
Like, whatever it might be, like, you can't fall but so outside of the path, or it's going to showcase itself really hard. Especially with, like, I mean, I get out there and roll and spar with guys like Austin. And if I didn't sleep good and eat good and take care of myself, a guy like that's just going to run through me. You know, not that I'm in there able to fight with these guys, but I have to be able to hold a certain standard. And I think as a I'm sure you've heard the term grandmaster syndrome,
I have
right?
not.
That's like, well, grandmaster syndrome is where somebody, you know, a martial artist becomes so awesome that they don't feel like they have to get out there and do what everybody else does.
Oh, okay.
So when the class warms up, they don't warm up. When the rolling happens, they don't roll. When the sparring happens, they don't spar. You know, and then that's how you've got a guy that's a black belt today that 2 years from now is nothing more than a purple belt.
Well, and it's
So
not to knock anybody's hustle, get it how you live it. But when I was a kid and I would do like when I would do like judo at the Y, my instructor, it would be, we've all kind of seen these, not to knock him either, Steven Seagal, but these kind of very portly instructors with the gi on, with the big belly, kind of like telling, and they put in the work probably, because you know I'm assuming, but they're not exactly doing what everyone's doing. They're kind of just pointing, hey, do this, hey, you suck at this, but not appearing to, you know, their appearance is a little off for someone.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, everybody gets older, their bodies
I
start to
get
go away
it.
from them. And, you know, but if you look at somebody like Grandmaster Elio Gracie, he was rolling and in great shape all the way into his mid-90s before he passed.
No, for
You know,
sure. And
he was always out there. And I believe that if somebody like that quit doing what they were doing, that would be what killed them.
because it's so a
You
part of
know,
their life. No, for sure.
you have to keep doing it, man. And, you know, if you, I'm a big believer in leading by example. So if I want my students to be disciplined, I have to
Truth,
be disciplined. If
without
I
a
want my
doubt.
students to be in good shape, I have to be in good shape. I can't tell my students to do something that I'm not doing myself.
It's tough to follow the orders from like an overweight motivational speaker or a fitness coach.
Exactly.
No, and I get
Yes.
it. Yeah, for sure, without a shadow of a doubt, man. So, I
Yep.
mean, you've got some, I'm sure, crazy, crazy stories, man. I mean, through your diligent hard work and what you've you know applied yourself to, especially in the military, et cetera, which lends itself to the discipline, you've managed to move into the security business. How did that begin? Because I mean, you like you said, like I said in the beginning, through your bio, you're working with some of the top flight crews. Where did this start?
Well, that started with that story I was telling you about with the head of security for Five Finger Death Punch coming here and me putting it on him and the video getting back to the band. And I was just very lucky to have I mean, it all started with jiu-jitsu, really, because that's what Zoltan was training and or is training. And that's how I got into the industry. And then from there, you know, I started taking classes for artist liaison work, bodyguard work. And then once you're in and you're with, I mean, Five Finger Death Punch is one of the biggest bands in the world. So if you can work for Five Finger Death Punch, you can work for anybody. So from there, you know, I got my hands in with other bands, and Five Finger Death Punch didn't stay on the road. So when they weren't touring, which was my home stay, then I would go work with these other bands. And you know, it's a fun thing, because I mean, I've been a heavy metal fan my whole life, and to get to go from, you know, having these guys' posters on your wall when you were in high school to now you're sharing a tour bus with these guys and like sharing steak dinners. It's
I saw you had posted,
a pretty
maybe it was a video, you said something about, I think it was Korn, you had saved up all this money to get this particular kind of guitar, and they signed it, and now you're like working with them.
So like, I mean, it's still shock and awe, right? Like, it's still shocking to me that you know, I'm friends with the guys in Korn, and I went from saving up money to buy a guitar to they're giving me guitars as gifts.
Right. That's
And
crazy. That's cool,
you know,
though.
but it's weird though, because they have the same respect for me as a martial artist. Like, they see me like the rock star of martial
For
arts.
sure.
Like, they're super impressed with my skill set in the same way that I'm super impressed with their skill set. So in a way, there's like this mutual respect. And in which case, you know, when you're an artist and you're trying to do your job, you're trying to entertain the world with music, the last thing you want to feel is insecure.
Well, especially
You know?
in your capacity, is that, and see, and that's something. I mean, obviously, this goes back to your discipline. I'm almost probably answering my own question, but because of the discipline you have, while also being kind of a mark for heavy metal, does that, when you're on the job, when it's showtime, you're on the job. You're not like, oh my God, he's crushing it up there. Like you're doing your job as a security guy. Is there a
Yep.
difficulty in that? Because it's like you say, you're still pinching yourself, but you also have a job to do.
Well, yes and no, and that's really what separates the more seasoned guys, the guys that have been there and done that, from the new guys that get into it. You're never not a fan, right? Because like, for a band like Five Finger Death Punch or Korn, Like you're part of the project. You're not working
Yeah.
for them, you're working with them,
For sure.
right? So you're not just protecting them, you're protecting the brand. Like, for
Yeah.
example, you know, say Ivan Moody from Five Finger Death Punch is standing outside of this tour bus. We're hanging out, getting ready to leave to go to the next city, and this fan comes running up. Well, you don't grab that person, double leg them to the ground, and put them in a choke and tell them they don't have credentials. That hurts the brand of the band. Instead, you go, hey, buddy, come here, and you keep a pocket full of guitar picks. And you go, here, I'm going to give you this guitar pick, but I'm going to need you to stay over there and be cool, man. Hey, enjoy the show. Thanks for coming
There you
tonight.
go.
You know, you're protecting the integrity of the band. Not that I haven't had to put my hands on plenty of people in a bad way, but the idea is to preserve the atmosphere. And you're not only protecting the artist from outside people, you're also a lot of times protecting the artist from themselves. You know,
Yeah.
there was many times, you know, working with, you know, various artists, I'm not going to mention their names and stuff to, you know, protect their reputations, but many times where I would have to almost counsel these guys and, you know, be like, hey, this is what it's going to take to get you to where you need to be and to do what you need to do. And sometimes getting these guys on stage and allowing them to do their job was harder than keeping people away from them.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
You know, and a lot of these guys, like if you look at a guy like Ivan Moody now, he's been sober for years, which is a beautiful thing because now he doesn't run around and do all the same crazy stuff that he used to do. But back in the day, there was just no telling where this guy was going to end up.
Well, I mean, it is almost those, like, I mean, that's why it's, I can only imagine the book you write or the 30 for 30 they read on you and the stories you hear, you know, you get in that world and sometimes, like you said, protecting them from themselves becomes,
yeah.
I mean, and this is almost cliche, you know, you're Johnny Rotten's, you're, I mean, it's there's lore, you know, Motley Crue, name it, name the group, enter name of the group.
Absolutely. Yeah. They all, like, I think they all follow a similar thing, right? They all come from nothing. Then they all hit the big time way too fast. Like, that's what happened when I first got with Five Finger Death Punch, is they went from this fairly unknown band to the biggest band in the world in just a matter of a couple years.
Yeah.
And I went from doing meet and greets with, you know, 200 or 300 people to doing meet and greets with 2,000 and 3,000 people.
Crazy.
And yeah, it's just insane. And so you have to evolve and change with these guys. And it's not like you're just, you know, with a band like Five Finger Death Punch or Korn. You're with each individual member, and they all have their own needs, their
Yeah.
own character. They have different things they want to do throughout the day, different places they want to go. They all interact with fans in a different way, and you kind of got to know that about them.
I mean,
you know, and
no, I'm just, and you have to, obviously, this isn't just you. I mean, you have to assemble the right team because there's so many moving parts with these guys. I
Yep.
mean, it's, I mean, ever probably, you know, ever diligent all day affair anymore. I mean, has it, I was, what are you looking for? And is what you're looking for in 2024 different from when you first started or from what you hear about old school security cats? Like, in this age, it just seems, I don't know, it seems different. It seems like the vibe's different, being like the patrons are different. What are you looking for as a security guy? Kind of like you were saying, someone running up on the thing, you know, running up on him. You know, whatever the old...
Well, there's layers to security, right? Like when you go to a show, there's venue security, which we call house. There's house guys, and you have a security team, and there's like a stereotypical thing that you do. You put X amount of people at the door, X amount of people out by the bus, X amount of people in the front of the stage, blah blah blah.
Right.
The main thing that has changed in the music world is the pace. Like, everything is so fast-paced now that it's like, you know, from one city to the next, it's like the train just speeds up and it's going. So the trick is to stay one step ahead of the train. You know, so
have not those tours, I mean, even 20, 30 years ago, have not those tours been night to night, couple days off, night to night to night to night? I mean, in that respect, isn't it? I understand what you're saying, like kind of the machine that pushes it seems like it's faster, but hasn't that kind of always been the rip with touring bands? They're just on the road
yeah.
constantly day after day after day.
Well, and it depends on the band too. Like some bands, like for example, a band like Korn, you know, they've already gone through their dark days. They've, you know, found a way to exist in the modern era where they're, healthy physically, spiritually, mentally, with their families. Most of these guys have kids, wives, stuff like that. So they've found more healthy, slow-paced ways to enjoy their careers, make their money, take care of their fans, and also take care of themselves.
Right.
But then you've got the bands that are, the new era of bands that have to go through the whole cycle themselves. They don't know what they're doing. Everything's going crazy. The money's coming, the drugs, the women, the whole rock star thing. It's all over the place. And
I can only imagine you see that. Like, you kind of, I mean, you're still a younger guy in the game, but you've definitely been there at the upper echelons. So when you see these younger guys coming up, you're like, God damn, been there, done that. And like you said, you almost want to be that counsel. Like, hey, you guys pump the brakes on this and this. Well, obviously, you can't save everybody, but I mean, you.
Well, it's no different than the martial arts community, right? The guys that have already been there and done that take care of the guys that haven't been there and done that. Like one of my, I had two guys that really took care of me when I was the young guy coming into the metal scene for security. I had Bruce Ryder, who is the current production manager for Five Finger Death Punch, does all their sound, but he's been in the music game his whole life. I mean, he was mixing like the original Slipknot record, Limp Bizkit, for like way back in the day, managing Static X. He's been around forever.
Wow.
And he took me in and was like, hey, John, I'm going to show you the ropes. And then the head of security for Korn, his name's Big Sleep. He's been with Korn since like the late 90s. And he saw me coming in as this young guy, this young martial arts guy. They all call me Tiny Ninja. And while I might be a badass when it comes to fighting, I don't particularly know all that much about security
right.
at the time. So they're like, all right, man, look, these are the things that you need to do to be a good security guy and take care of these artists. And then if you ever need to deploy your fighting skills, then you've got all that. But there's definitely a difference between the prerequisite skills of being a personal artist security versus, say, being an MMA fighter. Like, you can't just be a UFC champion
right.
and then go do security for Five Finger Death Punch.
It's like you said, we were just talking about putting all the different martial arts together. It's like putting it together, finding that right harmonious, getting it all where it works together, taking your acumen as a badass and then learning the ropes of security. That didn't just happen overnight. There's a learning curve. And that's
And there's lots of guys in the game, like one of the guys right now that's been in the game for a long time. His name's Yako Khalili. He's a BJJ black belt, combatives black belt, does security for Five Finger Death Punch. This is a guy like myself that came in as all around John Rambo. And then had to learn the ropes. But now this guy, like, he works for Sheepdog Response. He travels the world doing security. He runs a jiu-jitsu team, MMA fighters. He's another guy like myself that's managed to take his martial arts and combatives career and circle it around the entertainment business and made himself, like, he's his own brand at this point. And not many guys can do that. Like, a lot of guys that come into the security world, they do like a tour or two and then they're gone. And most of that's because they didn't have all the skills they needed. And I can't tell you how many guys come into the game wanting to be the rock star. And that's the problem. Like, you're not the rock star.
Yeah.
Nobody came here today to see me.
Right.
Even though I'm living with them and they're my brothers and I love them and they love me and we all take care of each other. And, it takes us all. It takes the guitar techs. It takes the guys that bring the water backstage to make the whole thing go.
I work in film and TV production, man. I started as a PA years ago, and that's essentially the same shit. Without us,
you need it, right? Yeah. I mean, it's really the back line. It's the crew that keeps the show going. But when the security is different than the techs or the back line guys, right? Like, they are literally in the presence of the artist, living with them on their buses, staying with them in rooms, eating with them at restaurants, going to social functions with them.
Right.
And in my case, most of the guys that I've worked with, I've also trained them in jiu-jitsu and martial arts combatives. So there's a degree to where when we step onto the mats, they become, I'm their superior, even though they're my employer.
Sure.
At that point, they're like, hey, this is my instructor. I have to be humble. I have to listen to my coach. And then as soon as we step off the mats and they strap on the guitar, you got to fulfill your role as the security guy, and they're the rock star.
Without
so
a doubt.
A lot of guys can't make that transition. They come in, they're too worried about taking pictures of everything, video,
yes,
wanting everybody. I've met so many rock stars, and I wish I had gotten their autographs or pictures or video of whatever happened and never got it because I was working. I'm being professional. How unprofessional would it be to be doing that?
Yeah.
You know? So.
Well, that's interesting. I, in so many different industries, especially that kind of celebrity-based, you got people in there for the wrong reasons. You know what I mean? Especially like security.
Yeah.
You want to make sure it's not some clout chasing motherfucker. Like, you know, this is a security job. You can do that Facebook, Instagram stuff another time somewhere else. You have a job to do.
There's time for it, man. They give you, like, I'll give you an example. When I was with Five Finger Death Punch one time on my birthday, we were in Ireland, and these guys rented out a whole bar for me.
Oh, shit.
And they were like, hey, John, you're off for the night. Don't worry about any of us. All the drinks are on the house. Let's party. We all got fucking trashed. You know, it was a great time. The whole next day I was off and then back on the clock. You know, so they do things to take care of you. But, you know, at the end of the day, it is a job. It's a cool job, but it's a job. You know, and it's not all that different from teaching martial arts on a regular basis. Like, you have to keep yourself clean. You have to, as far as your image goes, you know, you got to keep your image clean, and you have to keep a respectable reputation, you know, because oftentimes you're the person people go to problem solve. When the shit hits the fan, you're the guy they come to because you're supposed to be the cool, calm, collective. You don't panic. You do well under pressure. You've always got the plan. You know, it's
you're wearing multiple hats,
so,
man.
Yeah, well, but if it wasn't for martial arts, I wouldn't have it. So that would be another benefit of living the life of a martial artist, is without this, without martial arts, none of the rest of that would ever happen for me.
Well, and that's the macro, but you were saying, like, your reputation, how important it is. Everything you pretty much have working with as far as these bands started with your initial word of how you choked out whoever from Five Finger, and then that spawned, and, like, you know, the reputation grew just based off of what you did, and now you're working with all these bands and stuff. So yeah, like you said, keeping your reputation clean, you know, good news, good news spreads fast, and so does bad news, but you obviously had some good news spread.
One of the cool things, one of the coolest terms somebody ever gave me as far as my job was to be a vibe tech. They're like, no matter what the vibe is in the room, right? So say the artists are in a bad mood. They could have just gotten off the phone with a family member, a boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, whatever. And they're just in this crap mood, or maybe the stage setup didn't go like it was supposed to, or an interview went sour, or something. It's your job to put that artist in the best state of mind they can be in. Just like a fighter, just like a corner for a fighter, you get them to their best level of potential just before they ring the bell, just before they drop the kabuki for the rock show. You put them in that best state of mind, and then say go.
See,
you know, and then the job starts.
Yes. Having that person is so essential, brother, and I know you've done it, but it's one of those inquantifiable. You can't put a finger on why that's important. Having somebody in their circle, like you said, to help change a mindset during a show or even a fight or whatever. Because, I mean, you can't just have some stranger come up like, hey, you're going to do great. They're going to be like, go fuck yourself. You don't know me.
Go fuck yourself.
But having you, exactly, somebody intrinsic in the circle who can do that job. Again, that's one of those things that you can't quantify how important that is.
It takes, just like a fighter, having a good reputation with their coach or their corner, the artist has to be willing to let you in.
Yes.
To a certain degree, to know them. And if you know them, then you can help them on that level of seeing. That's where things get blurry or muddy, even, is because you do know them. You start thinking you can ask for favors, or maybe they're going to treat you a little different or whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're like, hey, I'm a rock star too. And it's like, no. You're a good human that's protecting another good human that has a job to do, and so do you. And because you both did your job, you had an excellent show that night, or an excellent fight that night, you know, and it's a team effort. It's a team, and you know you're not the rock star, but you're part of the rock star team.
You're because we're part of a team. What's that old Legos movie? No, I mean, but that's dope though, and I say it all the time, man. The success or failure, oftentimes in any venture, oftentimes is the assembly of the right team. And it's just every person counts, man. And on the bigger scale that you're working with, it really every person counts. So it's like that person. I'm not blowing smoke up. I mean, they're just lucky to have you, dude, because obviously you're a badass, but you also have that kind of philosophical approach to it. You know, the vibe. What they call you, the vibe ninja.
The vibe tech.
Vibe tech. I mean,
yeah, tech, and they all call me Tiny Ninja just because I'm such
I'm sorry. Yeah, sorry. I crossed the streams there. But having that kind of thing, again, you can't, how do you, you know, unless you're around them, you don't know that vibe or that energy that giving off. But that can also dictate the success or not failure of a show, but like how well a show goes or how well a fight goes.
It can be a failure. It can absolutely be a failure.
I mean, but people still pay to show up. They might do that. I mean, I don't know how much the fan sees of such and such is in a bad mood. But like you said, your job of getting people in the best mindset to get out there to put on the best show.
Well, you know, the team knows.
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
it's true.
You know, we know when we set the stage on fire that night, when we're like, yeah, man, we, and when I say we, I didn't get out there and play the drums, guitar, bass, or vocals, but I know I had a direct effect on how those guys did that night. And you know when you had a fire show, and you know when you were just barely getting by tonight because tonight was not the one.
Right.
You know, just like fighters.
For
sure. You
know,
there's certain fights where a guy just barely skimmed through that fight and he just made it. And then there's fights where, man, you put on a total clinic and it was like magic.
And there's something, there's a huge respect. I don't care in what aspect, pop culture, I don't care if you're Elton John or you're freaking Five Finger Death Punch. For you to go out there city after city after city to put on that same performance like it's the first time, like in Baltimore, like you do in San Francisco, they want the experience. I know you've done it 10 trillion times, but you got to put it on again like it's the first freaking time. Well, tip of the cap to people who can do that.
We have pep talks like that sometimes with the artist. We're like, hey, man, you know, these fans have had these concert tickets on their fridge for 3 months.
Right. Yes.
You know, they want a party every night, even though to us, we've been on the road now for 6 weeks. We're tired. We're tired of hearing these songs. We're tired of having to do the job. But these guys, I mean, half these people are living and dying by this night alone. There is no tomorrow night.
Yes.
There is no other. There's no next city.
So that's cool. That honestly, that's cool. That so you guys internal. I mean, I would think it would make sense that everyone would know that. Wow, these people got babysitters, took nights off, like you said, on the refrigerator for the last 3 months. So you guys have a somewhat, even though you're tired, I get it. But you guys have a conversation and you internalize. You at least acknowledge. Goddamn, we're tired. You know what I mean? Like you said, we're tired of these songs, but these people are here. Tonight's their night.
Yeah, and having your road family with you, that's why it's like, you know, that's why I call these guys my brothers and all the bands that I've worked with, you know, with my homestay being Five Finger. But, you know, they see you as the constant, because every night it's a different city, it's a different arena, it's a different set of faces and crowd and stuff. But you're the person that they can see that knows what happened last night and the night before that and the night before that and what's going on with their kids at home and what struggles, you know, the real world version of them. You understand and can help nurture that for them as the tour is going on. And, you know, that's where a lot of people suffer, is when the show stops, when the tour is over and everybody goes home. Everybody's like, man, what do I do? Like, it's almost like you lost your family for a minute, you know, until you get back on the road and go again.
Well, and again, one of those, you're the glue, man. You're the glue. And without people like you, it just doesn't roll the same. I mean, it's, anyway, they're lucky to have you, man. But yeah, I think that's interesting, man. Not just on a nightly base, but, you know, Jim Morrison, what was the song? When the music's over, you know
that's
what I mean?
That's right.
It's like, how do you, anyway. Dude. This has been awesome, man. I thank you so, so very much, man. I didn't want to keep you too much because I know I could just ask you all kind of shit about. Actually, I do want to ask you real quick. They had that, I'm not sure how hip you are to like that Travis Scott thing that happened a long time ago where people got trampled or whatever it was. Are you familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Astro.
I am, yeah.
Astroworld. So I mean, in a situation like that, as a security guy, you can't be at all places at all time. What do you do in a situation like that? And I'm just thinking about that one, but there's been, you know.
Well, there's moving parts to security. Like, like for me, I'm not only in charge of the venue and house security, I'm in charge of what happens with my band. Okay. So that, in that case, that would be a failure on house security's part.
Copy that. Okay.
You know, and those guys are not, well-trained. You know, most house security guys are just guys wearing security shirts that are in the way between you and the stage. The talented guys are hired directly by the bands to take care of them. So in a situation like that, I would already have plans to have an evacuation of my band off the stage into vans off the premises.
Okay.
You know, these are and that's your job to already have all these things in place. Just like if I take my guys to a bar or something, they're not sitting with the regular guys. They're not going in and out the regular door.
Right.
And it's your job. And they know, like, for example, if I looked at Ivan Moody and I said, "Hey, it's time to go. Come with me." He doesn't second guess or question what I said. He gets up, he stops whatever he's doing, and he does whatever I say because he knows that that's my job. Whatever right. I'm saying and doing is for his best interest.
Right.
You know, and this is not just for big rock shows. I've thrown some shows of my own. Like back in the day, I threw one called Marshall Music, where we actually had a heavy metal show inside of an MMA cage, where we did a concert first and then we did fights later that night. And you want to talk about chaos when you mix an MMA crowd with a heavy metal crowd.
Right.
We had bands like there's a good group of friends of mine, a band called Thy Will Be Done. Surprisingly, they actually just dropped a new single today. So if you're hearing this, go check it out. But yeah, they played that show and set the place on fire virtually. And we had to like get the crowd to calm down and stuff so that they didn't tear the building apart.
Jeez.
So some of it, I mean, did you see, you know, like Woodstock 99?
Yes. Yeah.
Like if like the band can incite that kind of stuff. And yeah. Then that's on the band. So like if the crowd is going crazy and then the singer of the band's like, "All right, you know, set stuff on fire.
Give me something to break."
Yeah, they'll do it. Like the fans will do whatever you tell them to do. And that's where like there's been times because I wear, you know, a radio or whatever. And our tour manager or whatever will radio and go, "Hey, tell whoever to calm this down or to look out for this." Or there's communication going on that people don't see.
Well, I mean, as it relates to that, I saw that that documentary, that Woodstock recently, and it was MTV speaking about like Fred Durst. Like, it's one thing if you're talking about, I mean, 5,000, 10,000, that's a lot of people. But you're, that sea of people that you are basically getting them riled the fuck up to the point where they start raging the way they were. I mean, granted, there's still personal responsibility.
They actually changed the set order around for shows like that based on the type of energy that the crowd is feeling. Like, they'll go from like, say, a band like Korn, then they're going to let Alanis Morissette play to calm everybody down for a minute before they bring in, you know, Five Finger Death Punch. It's like,
seriously,
like, it's almost like a chemical cocktail.
You need that release, dude. You need that. Yeah. I remember No One Here Gets Out Alive, the Jim Morrison book I read years and years ago. And he used to read about studying, like how to basically do that, induce and create a riot just based on your words and the tempo and what songs you're doing.
And it's not just a riot. It's fans are hanging on at your every word. So I just did a show with my good friends in the band called Upon a Burning Body. And we were in Baltimore. This happened like just last weekend. And I was just there hanging out with them as a friend. I wasn't even working for them that day. I was literally just there. It was my fiance's birthday. We were hanging out. They brought her up on stage, sung her happy birthday, you know. But he started getting the crowd surfers going, and they just like a sea just started flowing towards the stage, falling on the monitors, on the ego risers. And I just jumped out the crowd, jumped on stage, and started doing security.
It truly is kind of awe-inspiring, the power. I mean, you've seen it, I don't know how many times, all the bands you've been with. I've been to concerts too, but it's insane. Not insane, but it's incredible the power that these guys do have over their audience.
They do. Well, you got to imagine these guys sit around listening to these songs when they're driving.
Yeah.
They're listening to these songs while they're working out, training for fights, doing whatever they're doing. Now they're here in person.
Right.
They're part of the music. They're in this.
Yeah.
And so when the lead singer says, "Come up here and touch my hand,"
fuck,
everybody in the room's coming. And that's what, as security, you go, "Okay, hold on, Johnny. Like, let's get focused here. And then you start, because you play more than a, like, you got, first off, you got to protect yourself.
No, for sure.
Like, you might be a badass, but, you know, 2-3 guys get on you and they'll drag you down. So, you know, you're looking out for the band's reputation. You're looking out for the safety of the artist. You're looking out for the safety of the fans. That's a big one. Is we really let the, that's the reason I jumped on stage to help Upon a Burning Body, was I didn't want to see fans getting hurt because they didn't have enough security staff to handle the crowd surfers. Even though the venue says no crowd surfing, no moshing, it's like, yeah, right, but you booked Upon a Burning Body.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
like, what do you think's gonna happen? We're gonna square dance? Like,
seriously, yeah.
Come on, man.
The electric, like, slide. Come on, everyone.
Yeah. You're not ready for this, you know. So, yeah. So there's a whole lot to it, and I think with the future of heavy metal and rock and roll and security guys coming up, I think that we'll start to see more mixed martial arts guys, combatives guys getting into these roles. A lot of bands just have friends that are have been with them since the beginning that's like, man, I want to be part of this. And I think those days are over with. I think
yeah, as I say, that oftentimes doesn't always play out the best.
Yeah, no, it does not. You know, you need to have somebody who can, number one, handle the business. Like the guy I was telling you about, Yako Kalili, that's with Five Finger Death Punch right now. That guy will fight, like, no matter who it is. Like, no matter how dangerous the situation is, that dude's going to bite his back teeth, put his chin down, and go to fight. And if you don't have guys that are willing to go toe-to-toe, then you don't really have protection. Even though it's not always about going hands-on and fighting people.
No.
It's no different than like when I corner Austin Hall. You want to talk about an intense environment. We're sitting here pretending like heavy metal's where it's at. Go to a fight.
Yeah.
I mean, any press conference you ever watch for the UFC, do you realize how much security is there to stop these fighters from fighting? Like,
no, I mean,
just a couple shows ago, I was backstage for a fighter I was cornering. Everything's all cool. Next thing you know, there's like 15 dudes ready to fight backstage. And it's like, what the hell?
Bro, that's
now
what I'm saying.
Now you gotta be real careful, because so everybody here is a fighter.
It's one of those, well, I sometimes work with Cage Aggression, the outfit out of the Quad Cities here in the Midwest. And, you know, you got UFC Hall of Famers calling the fights. Like, you know, these guys have gone on to do LFA, UFC stuff. So I've seen it, like, backstage, especially during weight cuts. And they see their opponent. And sometimes I would have to do the interviews of the main events and shit like that. Yeah, it would get on and popping real quick, dude. I mean, not only because you're cutting weight, yeah, but everyone knows the stakes are so fucking high. Potentially so high.
The stakes are high. We're training to fight. I know it's a sport, right? And we're all here with good sportsmanship. We all consent.
Everyone's trying to
eat,
dude.
Sport that we're doing.
Trying to eat.
We're all doing our thing. But at the end of the day, only one of us is going to win. And sometimes, you know, you get coaches that get out of line. You get corners that get out of line. You get fighters, fans, family members.
Without a doubt.
And I try to, and that's where I bring some of my security work into the martial arts world, is I start thinking logistics. I'm like, okay, I got to calm this shit down. I got to get my principal out of here. At the end of the day, I got to have nobody get hurt. And that's both physically, mentally, and with their reputation for their career.
So I don't want you to skip over that, bro, because I think that's hugely important to not just security. I've done door work. I'll say I was a bouncer and this and that. I mean, I've done that kind of stuff. And what I found, and I would talk to those guys like, dude, don't, especially at 2 a.m. when everybody's fucked up. De-escalate. Do not ramp this up. Whether it's, I don't care, 5 o'clock in the afternoon or what you're doing. Like, you were talking about the guy who ran up, like, hey, here's some pics or whatever. You were catching more flies with honey than you were vinegar. You were doing the de-escalation. So whatever it is, on a large scale or small scale, the point to attempt to keep a situation under control is to de-escalate.
Well, martial arts in general is not to increase violence. It's to stifle violence. So anytime there's a chance that somebody gets hurt, even if you're the winner of the fight, you still failed because someone got hurt. And this is where, you know, you kind of want to take the Bruce Lee approach, right? The more zen, not that, you know, violence is always an option. It's just not always the option. So, you know, I always say to my guys, I have to protect the reputation, I have to protect their body, and I have to protect myself. So, because I mean, everybody's got cell phones and cameras now. So no matter what you do, if you sneeze the wrong direction, you know, it's all on video now. So you're responsible for making sure that whatever you do in the public eye is approved by everybody that sees it. And very few times have I put my hands on somebody and then regretted what I had to do right then, because it was the absolute last case scenario for
Absolutely.
me. And sometimes you don't have a choice. Like, I'll give you an example. I was with Five Finger Death Punch in Europe, and we were at this place called the Cherry Bar, which is like a legendary rock bar. And it's real fancy, and we're in there, the whole band, and it's rare that we got the whole band together hanging out after shows. The whole band's together, we're sitting down having drinks, and then this guy comes up. He's not even a fan, I didn't think at the time. And he comes up and he tries to sit with the band. And I'm like, "Hey man, this is a private area. You know, you can't be here." He starts cussing at me. I'm like, "Hey man, you got to move on. You know, go on, move away." He didn't want to, and out of nowhere, he grabs me by my jacket and cocks back to throw a punch. And when he did, I hit him with a palm strike in his jaw, lifted his feet up off the floor. He fell onto the glass table that had all of our drinks. Drinks went everywhere. Glass shattered. He's knocked unconscious. Everybody's looking at me, and I'm like, "Uh-oh." Uh-oh. Like, and what's funny is I remember the bass player for Death Punch, Chris Cale, he just kind of looked at me and kept drinking his drink. He's like, "Well, he asked for it." And I'm like, "Yeah, but like I didn't want that to have to happen." And then the guy laid there for a considerable time. And you know, then you look at it and you're like, "Man, did I have to do that?"
Well, let me ask you. Let
Like,
me ask you. You're a trained killer. I'm not, but I have this sentiment. I don't care. Say whatever words you want to say to me. I do not care. The moment you touch me, I used to have this thing like this kind of like 2 inch radius or 2 feet radius around me, like don't come in my circle or whatever. But I mean, what is your criteria for I'm going to put my hands on you now? I've let it go, but now it's on and popping. Is it physical touch?
no, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with the environment that we're in as it's happening. And this is what I tell all my
True that,
students.
true.
You don't know someone's story.
True that.
You don't know whether this guy just got divorced by his wife, whether his kid just died, he just got fired from work. You don't know what's causing this person to act irrationally. So this is where you have to be a good human and be like, "Hey man, this guy doesn't know who I am, most likely. He most likely doesn't possess the same skills that I have. And if he knew who I was and what I was capable of, he probably wouldn't be making this decision. But we have unfortunately crossed paths." You know what I mean? Like a goldfish got dropped into a shark tank and is trying to posture. So with that, I try to use the minimal amount of force necessary to control my opponent. So if I feel like I can neutralize this person without having to cause any damage whatsoever, then I will. But when there's a principle to protect, like a group of artists or your wife or your
Yeah, I
kids,
was gonna say, or your
you
family.
know, now all of a sudden, you know, you are not only threatening me, you're threatening my assets. So now the stakes are higher. So that's what I mean by the environment changes the way you would respond.
No, I get that.
So if my wife and my kids are present, I'm probably going to tolerate less shit. But at the same time, I'm also going to be very cognizant about the decisions that I'm making, because I'm making them not only for myself, but for the people around me.
One more question,
So,
and I'm going to let you slide because I feel like I kept you too long. Not too long, but this has been a great conversation, man. Thank you so very much, man.
oh, no problem, man. No problem.
And as far as the game, security game, and you mentioned something I hear, I'm old school professional wrestling fan. I'm a little older, so I like old 80s professional wrestling. And they used to talk about, man, if we had cameras and phones back in the day, we could have never did the shit that we used to do. And as it relates to the security game today, not to say you would fuck somebody up if the camera wasn't there, but how has that understanding of not just you, but how you put that out to your team, like be careful of what you do as far as physically aggressing on people simply because of the ubiquitous nature of cameras everywhere and liabilities for lawsuits, et cetera. How has the camera side of it changed the security game, if at all?
Well, the main thing is for anybody doing security, and not just security, like anybody playing any role in the public eye, you are now, like, the decision that you make right now, you have no time to think about. There is no regression back to, oh, I would have, should have, could have. Right? So every decision that you make needs to be suitable to the public's standards. Unless you had no other choice. So if a fan comes running up on stage and tries to grab Ivan Moody, I have no choice but to grab you and take you down. You crossed a line that I can't – now I don't care that it's on 10,000 people's video that I just took down this fan on stage and put him into an arm lock or something.
Right.
That doesn't matter. But if you made the poor decision of you were outside the tour bus, this fan comes running up with a poster – and you chose to knock that guy back over the rail and he trips up and busts his elbow over the curb. That was a poor choice by a security guard. You didn't have to do that.
Right. Yeah.
That's what I mean by you didn't have to do that. How high of a threat was that really?
Yes.
And that's where it comes down to the individual person. It takes a lot to make me nervous.
Well, and that's another thing, man, whether it's Secret Service or what you guys do, there's a lot of nuance. When someone comes up, you don't know if, like, oh, no, he seems chill, but is this seemingly chill behavior like a bait and switch for him to do, you know what I mean, in the moment, in, like, in the moment of seconds, you know what I mean?
And you never know.
Seeming like a benign threat. Within seconds, that benign threat can become a serious and malevolent threat.
Absolutely. I was in, I might have been in Australia. I was in a place where guns are illegal to have. I remember this. And I was outside of a club with Ivan Moody, and this guy looked very suspicious. He comes walking up, and I thought just by chance maybe he wanted an autograph or something. You know, generally I'm paying attention. Ivan's not. And next thing I know, I see this guy putting his hand in his pocket. I knock him down to the ground, and a gun comes flying out of his pocket.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, and I'm like, holy shit, like – and Ivan, he's like sitting there smoking a cigarette and he freaks out. He's like, oh my God. I'm like, I got him. I got him. I got him. And they have, you know, police on horses. So they come by and they get the guy and they arrest him. And he's like, holy shit, dude, that guy had a gun. And I'm like, he's like, thank God you were here. And I'm like, well, I had no idea that shit was about to happen. I just caught a weird vibe.
Yeah.
So,
cause that could, know, that I, could, I had, mean, I, not to think for you, but being, hey, we're in Australia. There's no guns here. Let me take that off the list
that's
of
what I mean.
Yeah, take that off the list of things to worry about. But you just can't do that.
Yeah, expect the unexpected, man.
Yes.
Like, I've seen everything. I've had to disarm guns. I've had to disarm knives. I've had multiple threats. I've had single people. I've had like moms, like just some random woman that you would not have thought was going to be the one to jump out the line and freak out. Well, that was the one.
Wow.
And, you know, so as you do the job, you start to expect the unexpected.
Well, because like you said, you just never – everyone's in their own lane, in their own head. Like people are jamming out to the shit at work, at the gym. Like you just – everyone's in their own zone, living their own life. You just don't know what these words that your principal and your talent are saying to these people. Like they might take it the cool way and just enjoying the music, or you just never know, you know, how they're internalizing it. So you have to be – fuck, man. You got to be on your toes at all times, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true, man. But hey, I am going to get ready to dip off of here.
Yeah, absolutely.
I appreciate you having me. If anybody wants to keep up with what's going on, they can go to odysseyma.com to check it out. You can also go to Odyssey Martial Arts on Facebook, Instagram. Check it out. Big stuff we have coming up. Austin Hall is going to be returning back to the cage at Anthony Pettis Fighting Championships in July in Virginia. So continue to support him. He deserves it. And, of course, all the wonderful artists that have brought me out and allowed me to have a career in security, from Five Finger Death Punch, Korn, Slipknot. You know, I love all those guys, and I appreciate them.
You're crushing it, man. And I will put the description, the links in the description of this episode. I appreciate your time. John Simons, man. Peace and so much love, brother. Take care.
All right, brother. Be good, man. Thank you.
All right. See you guys.